Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Episode von Pod of Rock, eurem Podcast-Magazin rund um Metal, Rock und allem drumherum. Präsentiert von EMP. Jetzt viel Spaß mit einer neuen Episode mit mir, eurem Lieblings-Josef und unseren bezaubernden Gästen. Hallo und herzlich willkommen, ich bin's mal wieder, euer Lieblings-Josef, und es ist noch gar nicht so lange her, dass wir den letzten Gast zu Gast hatten, nämlich nur eine extrem kurze Zeit, wenn ich mich recht entsinne. Aber wir dachten uns, Mensch, es gibt so viel zu erzählen bei dem lieben Thomas, dass wir einfach nochmal eine Episode aufnehmen. Deswegen diesmal nicht der Thomas von Wohlfahrt, sondern der Thomas von Before the Dawn. New album with Before the Dawn called Cold Flare Eternal is already out. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit together with you. There is one thing about the album that struck me immediately. It's the song Fatal Design. And I personally interpreted that song as a meditation on the mortality of everything, combined with a constructural idea of everything regrowing. Am I right with that assumption about the contents of the track? And how does that fit into your to create one must destroy mantra that Before the Dawn had for such a long time?
Such a deep diving question to begin the whole thing. But you are partly right. I think your approach is a little bit more positive than the original for the song. It's also about the vanity of a regular human being and the crisis that I think every one of us face about the mortality. So it's like I think our inbuilt desire to experience and feel and also to be noticed and heard at some point can create kind of like a collision with the mortality and the fact that life will end and it's not in your hands. It will end and it's there's a lot more bleak backstory to the song that you described. But I'm glad that you hear it that way, because it is a very like positive song musically. So the lyrical content is actually pushing it a lot darker than the music is. And you clearly felt the energy of the music. And I think that carries a like better message clearly. But what you asked about the destroy and... Yeah, actually, this is absolutely fucked up question to begin with, because this is really like a mind-boggling thing. But yeah, actually it fits, because that's my crisis. Like, I'm now 12 years older than I was when I buried and destroyed Before the Dawn back in the days, and now I brought it back with clearly I have the urge to still be heard and still be acknowledged with the music of Before the Dawn. So yeah, that's kind of like actually, my actions are proving the point of the song. Never thought it that way. Yeah,
I think the complete album has a very optimistic sound, but very bleak lyrics all across the border. How do these two? The questions get deeper and deeper. I'm sorry to to bombard you with those right out of the gate. I believe the album has a very optimistic sound and a very aggressive sound. Of course, it's heavy metal music. How could you not make heavy metal music sound a little bit aggressive? But the themes of the lyrics are very bleak on so many levels. How do those two concepts mix in general for you?
Well, they're basically both
equally tell a different story. Like, I always write the music first and then I do the lyrics. So they don't coexist in the phase of creation. And with the music and the positive energy, that's brought from the good vibes of the band. Like, we are having such a good time now with the comeback and the tours and the studio stuff and the videos, whatever we get to do. This is like the naturally the biggest one we have had in two centuries. This is we are living the best era of the band, and that can be heard in the music, especially with the after the comeback album Stormbringers. We did several European tours and a lot of festivals in Finland, a lot of club shows in Finland. So that energy also from the live shows and the energy from the audience got transformed into the music. So there's huge positive energy charge in the music. But when it comes to, and that just happens naturally. I when I write music, I follow the energy of the whole surroundings, and that's like that's why the album sounds kind of like uplifting even. But with the lyrics, like the way I observe the world and the current situations and stuff like that, I wouldn't be able to ever probably write a positive song when it comes to the lyrics. Like then I have a like different approach to everything when I start writing the lyrics. So that's why they are basically two different like streams that come together at some points. But yeah, the positive energy of the band is what makes the whole album sound so. I don't want to use the word cheerful or uplifting because they don't belong in the metal scene, but it's very positive, like you said.
Another thing that is giving me clashing information, but this time visually, is the cover art. I believe it's by, I hope it's, I hope I pronounce that name right, Gogo Melone. I look at the album art and it has a very industrial look to it, but after taking like 20 seconds staring at the thing, it kind of looks like rusted metal is in conflict with oil paint. What inspired the design? What inspired you to grab that visual artist to implement into your album cover?
We be working with Gogo with my other bands and doing a lot of like especially merch for the tours, and I really like her like very simple but complex approach to the graphics and how he can make things look very organic. And I just told her that I need to have the new logo as a centerpiece, and then just do whatever you think fits for the music. And I think that actually, it I don't know how it fits. I don't have the tools or the words to describe how the visuals that actually fit so well. But when we saw the cover proposal, everybody was like, yeah, this is going to be the cover. And it does actually, now that you mention, it does look like oil painting on a rusted metal. But I didn't see it that way myself. But yeah, it's I don't know. I can't explain how it fits. And also like the very gentle but bold way of using colors on the cover also really like fits well for the music and the diversity of the music. But and also you would need to ask this question from Gogo, because what I always like to do with graphic artists, I give as much freedom as possible. When my art is done, I've done with the music, I want to get another approach from another artist and bring that visual side to the cover. And I don't want to hold too much strings in my hands, because that's their craft, not mine. And they should be able to freely express themselves as artists. That's what I have with every photographer and also cover artist.
Before the Dawn has been dormant for a long time, is there any moment that you look back at very, very lovingly from the first era of the band that would not be able to create with the new constellation in the new era of the band? Or did the evolution of the band to that point it is now bring the bring those moments in another way?
Dear Lord, these questions. Well,
I'm sorry.
These are good ones. These are really, really, really good ones. But these are like kind of like not the easiest ones to go through. But these nice questions to wrap my head around. Again, one thing that I never thought of, but I guess like because Juha, our solo guitar player, who has also been our sound engineer since 2004, he's still on board. So a lot of my like dearest memories of the bands or the past era is also connected working with him or traveling with him or touring with him. And we are still doing the same. So it's kind of like a lot of the good memories and the good moments are actually just like a completing circle now when we are visiting some of the venues we did tour back like 15 years ago, or we're planning hopefully return to like Japan or China that we did a few times 2010 or so. So it's like we are revisiting those same cool moments and memories instead of like just having like two separate era of the band's existence. So it's more like, yeah, just completing, reliving the moments again and doing the same super fun stuff again together.
In As Above, So Below, you are writing lyrics about a very, again, about a thing that has a very intense dichotomy. Just as the title of the album indicates, Cold Flare, what are the two concepts that had to come together to even construct the foundation of the album?
Yeah, you need to repeat that again because I lost myself in the question.
Okay. In As Above, So Below, you are talking about a very, very diametrical concepts, being very far apart from each other. What were the concepts that were diametrically opposed to each other, but were the foundation for the album? You answered a similar question before in another interview. I thought I'd ask it with a little twist on it.
Yeah, this is, again, my compliments to you. These are excellent questions. Just trying to wrap my head around it, how to answer it in the same quality that the question is presented to me. It's Well, I think I've created like the contrast. That the contrast is basically my imagination and that creative side in my head, because there is no opposites when it comes to like creating the album. This definitely has to be the easiest album I've ever made or we have ever worked together as a band, even with the considering the previous era. So, and it was even so easy at the studio when it comes to like writing and recording. I had small crises that this is too easy. Like there should be more obstacles. Is this going in the wrong direction because we are not overanalyzing or we are not facing any hardship? Things are just happening super easy. Then with the lyrics, I have created this like a contradiction and stuff like that. But we didn't have any opposite sides that needed to come together when it comes to the music. I think that's the best way, that the actual art comes together on its own weight. And then you can, with your imagination, you can start building the contrast and the opposite forces around the music.
As far as I reckon, it's pretty much the heaviest album you've made so far. Is with Before the Dawn. Am I right with that? I feel like it is.
You are mainly right. Like there's one album that was the last album of the previous era called Phoenix Rising, and I would say that that had a little bit more like melodic black metal elements. It had some faster stuff in general, but I think when it comes to overall heaviness, this probably will top that one. Yeah.
Is heaviness? I'm thinking of Shockwave. Shockwave is a track that's like the whole album just punches you in the face for 40 minutes, but Shockwave punches you the hardest, I believe. Is heaviness in metal something that you actively approach, or is it something that just comes naturally with the genre itself?
I think
basically, are you trying to out metal yourself?
No, that was actually very accidental with the heaviness of this album, and with a few songs. I think Shockwave and both Stronghold and Shockwave were songs that I actually had to ask the guys, like, is this too much? Like, are we like now stepping into like a out from the box that was supposed to be Before the Dawn? But like again, how things went after the Stormbringers album and us playing, we never been this busy touring ever in the history of the band, and I think that shaped quite a lot of the songwriting, because it is more fun to play the heavier songs. That's just, there's a lot more things to do, and like it's it's just more fun to play that kind of music live. And we started to notice that also the energy from the live audience, like how well the heavier songs went with the audience. So with writing of this album, it's kind of like now knowing that we're going to step on the tour again, like in 1 week, and we're going to keep on touring next year. Like we were making like an album to play live more than just an album as part of the band's catalog. So yeah, we wanted to like keep and bring the live energy and focus on the style of the our music that kind of like fits the best for the live surrounding.
That's a very interesting approach. How does that differ from making the most album, making the most live compatible album? How do those concepts even differ from each other? Because I believe that if you're a musician, that's maybe naive. I thought if you're a musician, you always construct your music to be played live.
Not always. Like, well, when we did the Stormbringers, when we were writing and recording the album, we didn't know, are we even going to be able to do actual tours? Like, I have Wolfheart, Juho plays also in Swallow of the Sun, so our schedules are very complicated to begin with. So we didn't know even, are there going to be any festivals? We didn't, like, when we went to the studio with that album, we didn't know anything about live shows, or we didn't play any live shows together for 11 years. And then I have another band called Dawn of Solace that plays maybe one or two shows per year. I think this was the busiest year, and we played two actual shows. So, and I always write those albums as completely different than live music. Like, it's never meant to be played live. It has a, like, I write those albums to be listened carefully with your headphones, maybe glass of wine in your hand and candle beside the window, in a way. Like you focus only on the music, and it's not made for entertainment in that sense, that you have few hundred people in a club drunk doing mosh pits and stuff like that. So actually, yeah, not all of the albums are written to be live albums, and not all the songs even for especially like Wolfheart, that's been the most busy band in my career. Like, some songs I write only for the album, and I know already when writing the song that I'm not going to enjoy playing this song live. It might have some emotional attachments or something like that. So it's actually, it's not always like, it doesn't always work as a factor that you're going to play the music live. And I think, like, because it was so much fun. We haven't had fun in 15 years playing live shows with Before the Dawn. You need to remember that we are coming from a very weird place, back to the touring cycle and back to being this busy. So Yeah. We are just rediscovering something super fun that we kind of lost over a decade ago. So that kind of amplifies also this whole we get to play these songs live factor that usually is not there, because usually band is just going forward with the career and albums come in 2 or 3 years and you have this steady cycle that goes on, and we dropped off from the cycle. We are now back. So yeah, it's not always, or at least not most of the time, the case that you know that the album is going to like be played live, at least in our case.
I got one last question. What is your favorite album to listen with a glass of wine and your headphones on? And what's your favorite album to enjoy live from another band? It can be two different bands, two different albums.
Well, at the moment, like right now, it varies, of course, of the day and the mood. But I would say I don't drink wine, so there's gonna be probably Coke Zero in my glass.
That's fine too.
But it would be City Burials of Catatonia.
Yes, I can see that.
But then again, I don't enjoy that kind of music live at all. Like all the other people in the audience are just distracting my experience. So like I have a different music just to focus on and different music to live on. But for the live album, it would be the latest full length of Orbit Culture. That's not a wine and candle music at all. That's definitely live energy music.
Thank you so much, Thomas, for the interview. It's been stellar as it has been last time. Really, really enjoy having you on the show. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you next week again.
Yeah. It's just a good weekly tradition now.
Yeah, it is. I think we should just do this, and that's the podcast from now on.
Yeah, I'm in.
Thank you so much, Thomas. I hope you have a wonderful evening. I wish you the most success anyone could have with any album ever. And you out there, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and most importantly, rock and roll.